This is talking with Henry Palmer on 18th August 76 in Cambridge, in his caravan. So, can you tell me what your... You came to Dobville as a research student, is that right?
No, I came to Dobville as an assistant lecturer.
I see. And what was your background before then?
I graduated in Oxford and did 5 years of meteorology.
I see. And where was that?
University of Oxford. Have you ever heard of Professor Dobson?
No.
You don't know your meteor physics. He's the man who spotted Dobson Charlie, spotted the ever warm there as a result of NASA's meteorites. But he also did, he was reading Dobson. And had a research group of, roughly speaking, 2 all through the war and afterwards. Or 3. He was also interested in those. Dobson's real career was in those. But as he'd done his meteor stuff as a sideline in 25, and he did a bit of cloud physics during the war. And I was in that just after. Also, to 52.
Now, how did it happen that you switched to radio astronomy?
There weren't any jobs in meteorology which interested me in 1952. For various occurrences, and largely, I think, because it was a well known star in Oxford, I did not wish to join the civil service. And most of the jobs in meteorology are in civil service.
Mm.
In those days, we had an argument about the instruments, which meant that our branches of civil service were more flexible. But in meteorology, you were locked into a civil service non-contributing pension.
I see.
And although I've never in fact actually used this facility, I've maintained it in my head as a minister. And it's a nice sort of feeling at the point.
Mm.
So there were no universities. I spent some time, just remember that I said that summer, when my meteorology got. There was a delay from my mother, and after 5 years, I got my PhD, but didn't finish it. I said, either change subjects in Britain, or go overseas in meteorology. And I spent quite a long time trying to go to Canada in meteorology, and that might very well have come to pass, had I known then, that if you want to go to Canada, you don't tell them exactly what you want to do.
Because they'll do it themselves, or?
You go and do something that they want to do.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. I told them what I wanted to do, and they liked how to do it. And I struck unlucky that their particular group I was interested in was declining at the time.
So your PhD actually was in meteorology.
Yes. And when I got, and I was appointed assistant lecturer, which is the bottom grade in the city of those days, for 3 years. And after I'd been at Dobville for about a month, Lovell sent a secretary around to ask me why I hadn't registered for a PhD. And I said I'd got one and I didn't want to mention one very much. And he remembered that for quite a long time.
So, you were hired then to, what was your interest in, well, your interest in going to Java was for a job, and was that an interesting field, I suppose.
Was head of the ship. Had advantages compared to meteorology. It was a change. It didn't have 150 years of which meteorology does, and
which makes my job easier also.
Which had oppressed me very much for the previous few years. And it did seem to be a wide open field, as most of the things in meteorology either seem to require a large team or seem to try to win it. And I really thought that these were advantages. And I wasn't particularly worried. And people told me, the QE director of lab told me that it was highly speculative and dangerous and so on. But my own feeling was that I applied to Manchester merely because it was one of the few places that was advertising academic posts. Very few places. It was the last year of the campaign. They say they're all thin. It seemed very thin that year. There were some posts in Sheffield in Manchester. And there were some posts in Manchester which were unspecified.
Was it this easy to just apply to these posts in so different fields? And was it because you had electronics knowledge that could be adapted?
I may say so, an Oxford PhD, which is a worthwhile qualification. And I was interviewed. I was applied and was interviewed, or offered interviews, for an assistant lecturer in Sheffield. And a friend from the professor, but he was well known in Manchester in those days. And Blackett was interviewing five in Manchester. And I had within cloud physics done a bit of work on cloud chambers, and that had some nuclear interest and sort of level. Well, Blackett could see that there was something there. In fact, as far as can be discovered, I was probably sixth in that interview. Had five posts. The sixth post appeared about 3 weeks later. The day I was going to Sheffield, Blackett wrote and said, would I rather than bother into a game about Blackett? And by that time, I discovered that the radio stream existed in the room I was in bed. But I hadn't read it before I went into the room. And in any case, although I didn't realize it, there were internal candidates in Manchester. I mean, they really advertised and put ahead, but I think there were enough internal candidates. And I think, well, there were certainly three contemporaries to make the job, and I thought there were four. It was Palmer, Maxwell, and R.C. Brown. I can't remember if there's a fourth. Brown, incidentally, was a nearby meteorologist from Cambridge, so people obviously get out of meteorology that summer. And Maxwell was a homegrown research student at Georgia.
What was it in radio astronomy that particularly attracted you? Did you have a subfield that you were especially interested in?
Well, yes. I suppose I perhaps would believe in having a sort of first reserve. All during the war, I was extremely interested in shortwave radio and certain construction, or very small images. And then I went to university, and you could say that meteorology was a continuation of that interest. Well, now, when that seemed to have turned out, but of course, I seemed quite happy to revert to, and felt I had a special interest in radio. It wasn't as strong as radio.
I see. So, how was your first project selected in the as to what kind of astronomy was going to be?
When I got to Georgia. Well, I suppose I, after that, I went up and was interviewed by the doctor, and we talked about the difficulty of having to do an Oxford of man, so it's like roots and colors. And he stabbed me. She asked me three times where I came. But I can't remember very much else about that conversation. And I was shown up with my hand on the ground in one of the films. It was this hand. And there was a research student started the same year called Dick Thompson. So we started the same day. It was a slight sign line there. There was a month's gap between the end of my ethology grant, which for some reason ended at the end of August, and the appointment of Nancy was the 1st of October. So I, if you want the gory details, there had been a misunderstanding about the meteorology grant, because when it was first made, it was equivalent to the BSIR, and then the income tax turned around and taxed it.
Mm-hmm.
So the following year it was put up, because I always feel very poor, but I'm still short of that 1 year's tax. Back in 45 or 6, less than 47. And therefore, I wandered around to the office and asked, and there's a little familiar operation, Cheshire, we can't help you. So we got to Cheshire, I went into the office in Knutsford. We took a caravan to Cheshire about a fortnight before the first. Esmer got a job as a school teacher for the day, but I was unemployed for a fortnight. And I signed on at Knutsford unemployment exchange, and I felt I couldn't really drive up to the office to collect new benefits, so I used I bicycled 5 miles in 2 weeks to collect my £5 in the day. So I can now proudly say I know it feels like being employed, and I've drawn benefit for a fortnight.
Okay.
And basically, if you've got a job and it's hard period out here, you won't bother to just pay up for it. So then I went to the job and I turned up on the first TV time, you see, and if I turned up for a little bit, it would be brilliant. And Henry Brown said, well, look, we think that the useful thing to do would be phase-sensitive radio interferometer. Because at that time, they had just completed about 2 years of the Hamburg Jensen Descartes, video beat, radio interferometer, you see. And they'd stubbed their toe on the fact that the signal noise was poor and those signals. And so Henry's reaction to that was, well, if it doesn't work, we're just going to build a phase-stable system, which doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And applying my wide knowledge of general physics, I, after about a day's work, he said in a rather possible, if this doesn't sound interesting to you, we'll think of something else. So I said, well, I suppose it passes the normal tests, it's original, and my good thing, let's do it, you see. Thompson and I did it. So that's how that happened, and it was all negotiated in 2 days. It was Henry Rouse, yes.
And this was about the same time as Mills was working his radio in Rouse, is that right?
Well, we always heard a rumor. There was a chap called Carter who worked with our long runs in Australia. That's really all I know.
And who's Carter?
That is the name that I. It was a reprint. There was one reprint that was mine. And I think. We always heard that they're doing marvelous things and never saw anything else. And I fancy in some way to recreate that reprint.
So, what did you do with this?
So we started with an empty net. Jason, I mean, the Hamburg Brown has a lot of what actually happened was that Thompson, who was a Manchester graduate and knew quite a lot more about radio than I did, with Hanbury's help, built a radio that built an interferometer, a phase stable interferometer. You see, they hadn't ridden a phase stable. That's not quite true. But he built a phase stable interferometer which only put low frequencies on cables. What I did actually was to build the pass transistor. Because Hanbury, Brown and Hazard's room was full of batteries. Because that was the easy way to get stable film voltages. And there was a conviction that this wasn't the right way to do it, really, even in 1952. And somebody had got hold of a design, for a scheme which used 807 valves to buck or boost the mains via a transformer. So they added, but in that it was called the Thompson pass. It was main stabilizer. With a nice diode reference. I certainly built a scheme which had 807s bucking and boosting the mains, and that bit was made to look good. I've forgotten how we were going to. And then eventually, after I'd had it for 3 or 4 months, J.G. Davis said, why don't you use an iodine diode? So we effectively built the Solomon, which had a satisfactory performance, by Easter 53. That was about 4 years before we came on. We got those two, and we got them out. Which is, so that, oh, then I moved on to the next. Because, as it says in the readers, it was a phase swinging from them. It wasn't phase switching. Oh, phase switching, so we couldn't use that. So it had a continuous advance of phase, and this was done by rotating magnets. And the Carmo arrangements for rotating magnets were all my handiwork, and survived for about 5 years.
No, but phase swinging is no different than rotating load.
That's right, it was a rotating load or phase swinging, but it wasn't a phase switching. So.
Right.
And we had long arguments, Thompson and myself, as to what happened to the load when it hit the ground, and we were
on the other side.
On the other side.
Now, the first publication that I have you done for is Ruth Hanbury, Brown, and Palmer and Thompson on large diameter radio sources in black and plains. Is that with the system?
That was the first thing this one did. We made it work. We started in 1954. Well, we made it work that summer, see, with the transistors. And we learnt a lot with the node. We learnt that you get noise coupling between the areas, so you get a standing print, which is very hard to separate the. On short wave sizes, it's practically impossible to separate that fringe from the. It's much bigger than necessary. Remember, and I still don't understand how people use these beam switching cables, you know, that's a different question. We had a lot of trouble with hand print. Some of it, certainly, was kind of air coupling, and we got rid of most of this. And then, we had about 1,000 yards here, and we started trimming out north of them on the farm. We've stubbed our toes on the fact that we have to compensate the delays. We found this at the hard way because we suddenly funny ratios using this cassette here. And until you corrected the delay for the beam swing, it didn't make sense. And Even in those days, other people used to slow something a little shaky music, and the ground just convinced you that instruments that they didn't understand. I'm sure that, of course, indeed.
You mean the musicians didn't agree with the
previous arrangements? No, I'm afraid I've forgotten what it was. They had got Jensen Bastard, Simpson Cassidy. Simpson was supposed to be a lot smaller than Cassidy. And we were ready by then, Simpson was being Cassidy. So, in a different position, it was likely to be wrong. In fact, after about a month, and in the sandwich, it was wrong. The reason was we weren't compensating for the 20 degrees shift. Which doesn't matter. I mean, they were done at times. Yes, we were in the north, as soon as the south. And when you check all this down, it's a couple of hundred yards of cable, right. And we weren't doing it. So
you said you had a different positioning. Were you actually moving these baselines around?
The main angle was the transistors, which is 2 foot.
218,
2 foot. Small one, and we had the iron inside the window. It was a 151 wall side array, 4 frames. 16 or 20. It was 16 by 24. It was made so we could go on a lot. We were planning to figure out where it is. We started off learning about some of this. And we were moving these frames out for a little sample. Jensen's had been hanging this. But the one thing that was very important was that the system has been hearing. It's calibrators, I mean, the great thing in those days is the physical sources and analyzers, all that came so much of the light out of
them. They were resolved. And what did you make of this? There were two different kinds of sources, one's on the plane and one's
out of the plane? It left me with a conviction that short baselines aren't very interesting, and they're very difficult but not very interesting. I mean, because of the tremendous study we had with the sound fringe, and I would say that we. We did all that summer interviews, so I got 2 years of summer. I had a 3-year apartment. We started doing videos. We did meeting all the best lines in the system. I think it would be a time.
Well, the Java
the 56 to 480, I would say, was cables. And the 630 afterwards was all in. So that was the first reading of the phone. That used to be just across the road. I had a hand in doing that. I then went to the States and said, no, that's it, right. In the spring of 55. And Thompson got the 980 going by himself.
No, any wavelengths?
980 wavelengths, which looked for a low reason. And people began to think how very interesting it all was. And so I had a hand in the following three. And they were all done now. I would say. Yeah, if I were. Those must have been done in the summer. That's right. The 9, I went to the States, Easter 55, and that's in the 90s. The 2060 was Oosters in my garden, Oostery, in those days, in the small house we had in those days. And that was done in the early summer, and 67,000 was done in the sort of high summer. And the Cat and Fiddle was done.
Cat and Fiddle is this
10,600.
This relay station in the hills, isn't it?
Cat and Fiddle is a pub.
Is it?
It's a pub, the highest pub in England, up on the canal.
Oh, I see.
Which you can see from Julius from Trouble. But we were in the back bit of moor of that place. And well, you should have to think very hard to be quite certain that that was done.
Well, you can check this off in the transcript.
Yeah.
Look it up.
I would say that must have been done in the summer. I was going to tell you about this trip to the States. You see,
yes,
there's
another year.
Internal politics, but I've forgotten how it came about. Exactly. I'm fairly clear. I think the workforce is there, because Lissell was one of them. I think that's right. So that C.G. Lissell, who's now in Alaska, Maxwell, I.C. Brown, Palmer, were all contemporary signatories. So after 3 years, they all would reasonably expect to be made lecturers, because they didn't quite have lectureships on that scale. Lovell must have had 3, because he offered one to each of those 3, and he offered me an extension assistant for the 4th year. And I said, not on your merit. I'm fairly peaceful, I know all of this. I felt I had a rough time, and that was that. So, I think it's fascinating. I wrote to Professor Marshall in Montreal at a college at Brown's suggestion and said, this doesn't even turn out too well. I'm considering reverting to meteorology. And he said, why not come and see us for a month? At least 17 months in Montreal. Seemed to my young eyes in those days seemed like a charm. And the university gave me leave. Lovell tried to persuade me that I'd have to make up my mind. I said, for a minute, I can't see why I have to make up my mind. He said, I think I'll go to Montreal first. And I went to Montreal, and I... several things happened in my space. And I found that reverting to astrophysics and biology was absolutely made my heart sink. So I was quite clear that I did not wish to do it if I could possibly avoid it. But it wasn't clear I could avoid it. But equally, if I had to do it, I'd rather do it in North America than in Britain. So I came back from there with an offer of a 3-year appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And an agreement to hang on to it. And by the time I came back, Lovell would have heard that some bad luck in the sense that this was decided to go to Alaska. And Maxwell decided to go to Fort Davis.
Mm.
So they only left him in Brown and Palmer anyway, you see. So, and then the funny thing happened was that summer, I agree in family, too, I suppose. Anyway, we went to the east coast of England quite early in the year, in June, I suppose. Jolly chilly as usual. And the secretary rang up on Thursday and said, look, if you can come back tomorrow, there's some other interesting interviews. Do you think you would wish to have a full application? So you might wish to attend. So I interrupted my whole gameplay. And I stood around in the university all day, and eventually all appeared and said, Saturday, Bob, we decided to offer you a lecture.
A level, did you say? Or,
yeah. To question the situation.
Right.
Without interview. And I felt a bit cheesed off because I got my savings and said, you should have a chance to see that. And had a chance to tell the University of Wales about it. So I said firmly, I am resolved under the circumstances. I'm not taking the first part of this day. And he said, well, we've been discussing important matters that we will appoint you on.